Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. I'll be sharing a brochure with you today. The title is The Art of Living Well with Low Vision. It's published by HumanWear. This is a company that specializes in assistive equipment for people who are visually impaired. Today's topics will help you understand your vision loss and help you to adjust to your vision loss. And once again, the title of the pamphlet is The Art of Living Well with Low Vision. The subheadline is interesting. It says, See Things Differently. HumanWear is the publisher. The first part is an introduction for you. Too often, people with poor vision accept a greater loss of independence than is necessary. Often, simple assistive devices or minor modifications to their daily life can reduce the effects of vision loss and improve a person's quality of life. This handbook, or this brochure, is intended as a resource to provide readers, or listeners in your case, with an overview of some of the more common low vision conditions and some helpful hints on how people with poor vision can still maintain a high level of independence. At HumanWear, we are committed to designing and manufacturing innovative solutions that will help blind and visually impaired people lead more independent lives. Our products combine high performance and user-friendly features with outstanding reliability and service. If we can help you with further information about any aspect of low vision, please feel free to call us. I will be giving you contact information at the end of the program. This is Chapter 1. There are three chapters. I'll do two today and one next week. Chapter 1, Understanding Your Vision Loss. First of all, a definition. What is low vision? Low vision means having a level of vision where you need more than just glasses or contact lenses to see well enough to read or to do everyday tasks. Your central or peripheral vision, or maybe both, may be reduced. Your vision may not be able to be corrected with surgery, but you can still see something. And with the help of vision aids, you can still be independent. Next question they ask is, what causes low vision? A person may have low vision as the result of an injury to the eye or one of any number of eye-related conditions, such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, and diabetic retinopathy. And some people are also born with low vision. We will get into more about these conditions of what causes low vision in just a minute. But first, what are the symptoms? The symptoms of low vision depend on the cause of vision loss and where the problem is located within the eye. Symptoms can include blank spots, dark spots, or wavy lines in the center of your vision, blurred, hazy, cloudy, or even double vision, or any kind of a loss of your side vision or your peripheral vision. Now we go back to those causes of low vision. The primary one is age-related macular degeneration, AMD. Age-related macular degeneration affects 25 to 30 million people worldwide. The macula is located in the center of the retina, which is all at the back of the eye. It processes the image our brain translates into central vision. The size of a pea, the macula helps us see sharp details, such as freckles on a nose. As our eyes get older, the membrane separating the macula from the retinal blood vessels can weaken, depriving the macula of nourishment. When the macula degenerates, so too does your central vision. AMD, age-related macular degeneration, can seriously affect one's central vision in just a few months or even over the course of several years. In severe cases, scar tissue from leaky blood vessels can cause irreversible blind spots. Please note that AMD will never cause total blindness, since your peripheral vision remains unaffected. People with AMD may be able to see the color of someone's shirt, but they can't see their face. They might spot a small coin on the floor as they walk through a room, but they cannot read the clock on the wall. Even when looking straight at you, a person with AMD will likely be able to see the color of your hair, or if you're wearing a shirt with a collar, but will not recognize your face. AMD also makes variation in color hard to distinguish. For example, someone with AMD may see a raspberry-colored sweater as a soft pink color instead. While no two individuals with AMD experience exactly the same degree of vision loss, brighter light and sharp contrast in color can make objects more visible to anyone with the condition. Ways to improve lighting and color contrast to help the person's peripheral vision are explained later in this handbook. There are two forms of AMD, the dry form, which is the most common, and the wet form, which is less common but causes more severe and more sudden sight loss. With dry AMD, the more common variety, varying degrees of sight loss are caused by deposits of what they call drusen, D-R-U-S-E-N. And this brochure defines those as age spots, and they do form in the macula, drusen. Wet AMD, the other kind, results from abnormal blood vessels forming and leaking into the macula. The cause and cure for AMD are unknown. However, treatments are available in a small percentage of cases. Possible risk factors for the condition include smoking, genetics, hypertension, sun exposure, farsightedness, having light skin or your eye color, and having a poor diet. The next possible cause of your low vision might be cataracts. A cataract is the clouding of a normally clear and transparent lens of the eye. When a cataract develops, the lens becomes as cloudy as a frosted window, and light cannot be properly focused onto the retina, resulting in an unclear image. Often, only a small part of the lens is affected, and if sight is not greatly impaired, there is no need to remove the cataract. If a large portion of the lens becomes cloudy, sight may be partially or completely lost until the cataract is removed. Depending on the size and the location of the cloudy areas of the lens, a person may or may not be aware that a cataract is even developing. If the cataract is located on the outer edge of the lens, no change in vision may be noticed. But if it is located near the center of the lens, it usually interferes with clear sight. As cataracts develop, so may hazy, fuzzy, and blurred vision. Double vision may also occur. The eyes may be more sensitive to light and glare, making night driving more difficult. There may also be a need to frequently change eyeglass prescriptions. This was for cataracts. The next possible cause, glaucoma. Glaucoma causes the gradual loss of your peripheral, your side vision. Although linked to an older age, glaucoma may develop at any age, even infancy. The cause of glaucoma is unknown, but a number of risk factors have been identified. These would include age, heredity, myopia or nearsightedness, increased intraocular pressure, IOP, and systemic diseases such as diabetes and hypertension. These are the possible risk factors for glaucoma. Vision loss from glaucoma may be caused by increased intraocular pressure and other influences on the optic nerve located at the back of the eye. The diminishing nerve function causes loss of peripheral vision painlessly and without notice. It is important to be aware of the possibility of glaucoma, particularly if you have any of the risk factors. Some drugs, such as cortisone or steroid drops, can cause glaucoma. As well, some visual disturbances that cannot be corrected by glasses may be a sign of glaucoma. But this is also true for AMD and diabetic retinopathy. And that is our next topic, diabetic retinopathy. The main cause of visual impairment in people with diabetes is diabetic retinopathy. This is a condition in which changes occur in the tiny blood vessels that nourish the retina, which is the light-sensitive tissue that lines the back of the eye, and changes light into nerve messages transmitted to the brain. In the early stages of diabetic retinopathy, small blood vessels weaken and leak fluid or tiny amounts of blood, which distort the retina. At this stage, the person may have normal vision or may experience blurred or changing vision. Although 25% of people with diabetes have some form of retinopathy, most cases do not progress to more severe problems. In a more advanced stage, however, blood vessels in the retina are blocked or closed completely, and areas of the retina die. Proliferative diabetic retinopathy affects about 5% of people with diabetes and occurs when new, abnormal blood vessels grow to replace those old ones. These new blood vessels are fragile and often rupture and bleed into the eye, blocking vision. Scar tissue forms, shrinks, and then tears the retina, causing bleeding or detachment from the back of the eye. This can result in severe visual loss or blindness. Unfortunately, this occurs only in a small minority of people with diabetes. And this was once again called proliferative diabetic retinopathy, affecting 5% of people with diabetes. The chances of having some form of diabetic retinopathy increase the longer a person has had diabetes. Diabetic retinopathy is present in 90% of those who have had diabetes for more than 20 years. Now, moving on, when you get that diagnosis, when somebody tells you you've got it, each person will respond differently upon learning they have a serious eye condition. Shock, disbelief, depression, and anger are common reactions. These feelings can last for days, weeks, months, or even years. It can be frustrating for caregivers and family members if a person who is visually impaired or blind has a very negative attitude. However, it is important to remember that a supportive and caring environment is key to a successful vision rehabilitation. Now, if you're a caregiver, try not to be overprotective. Sometimes caregivers, family, and friends can show their concern and support just by being there. Friendly visits and organized outings can be of great benefit. Humor is also an effective way to cope with the challenges presented to people who are visually impaired. Though laughter is often the best medicine, don't use it just to mask a hurtful experience. Any adjustment to any form of vision loss can be gradual and often emotional process. To help with the process, we suggest the following four things. The first one, obtain as much information as you can about the condition and share this information with your family and your friends and any others who can help you. Like I've mentioned before, knowledge to me is power. The second thing they suggest, however, is to find a support group and join a support group. It helps to talk about it with other people. Number three, suggestions, encourage family and friends to visit you and to be supportive. And number four, it's a hard one, allow time to grieve for your lost vision. This is a very human and natural emotion, and it does take time. Now we're moving on to chapter two of the pamphlet. And once again, the pamphlet is called The Art of Living Well with Low Vision. Chapter two covers adjusting to vision loss. If you are a caregiver, encourage open and honest communication and assure the person receiving your care that they are not a nuisance. Living with age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts, or any eye condition does not mean that cooking, exercising, socializing, and even enjoying a good book become impossible. A few simple adjustments in and around the house will help ensure everyday activities are still within reach. First of all, lighting. Both inside and out, brighter and strategically placed lighting will make a world of difference to a person living with vision loss. As we age, we require much more light than younger people. People with vision loss, especially seniors, find that they need even more light than their sighted peers. Extra lamps throughout the home provide increased lighting and will help someone with vision loss make the most of his remaining vision. A brighter home is also a safer home. Sensor lights are a relatively inexpensive way to make sure the home's exterior entrance is always lit. Install lighting inside of closets, cupboards, in staircases, or even in the shower. Be sure to use a waterproof light, of course. Most importantly, however, is the addition of bright task lighting throughout the house. Task lighting can be aimed directly at what needs to be illuminated whether you are writing, sewing, reading, or performing some other activity. Small clip-on lights are suitable, as they are bendable, as are also bendable gooseneck lamps. Buy a tiny flashlight or even a pen light to be carried with you at all times. It will come in handy more often than you may imagine, especially when you're in dim restaurants or when you're trying to unlock your front door at night. Reduce glare whenever possible. Window accessories such as sheer curtains or shades will help keep glare out of your rooms. Wear a hat with a visor for visits to stores that use glaring fluorescent overhead lighting. An eye care professional can help you select a pair of tinted anti-glare sunglasses for outdoor wear. These will eliminate glare from the sides and from the top, which is far better than the protection that regular sunglasses provide. Now, the first topic they talk about is doing things differently in the kitchen. Countertops can be painted to contrast with your dishes, your cookware, and other items. Any paint or hardware store can tell you which products would be appropriate for painting a countertop. Here are some other tips on how to make the kitchen easier to use and safer for someone who has vision loss. There's a kitchen checklist. Ooh, try saying that a couple times fast. Kitchen checklist, and there are 9 of them. The first one is to paint or replace electrical outlet covers in a color that contrasts with the wall. 2, instead of painting, you can outline the counter edges or those electrical outlets with some wide tape of a contrasting color. The third tip for the kitchen, if the stove surface is a light color, consider replacing stainless steel pots and pans with darker colored ones. Again, you're going for the contrast there. 4, use light colored dishes on a dark tablecloth or vice versa. 5, mark frequently used settings on the oven controls or other dials with a thick swipe of bright nail polish. Here's another case where, this is a comment from me, where you can use that puffy paint that I like so much. You can use like settings in the oven. One could be for like 250 for a low oven, another for 350, another for 400. 3 different marks of puffy paint will tell you low, medium, and high. Back to the article now. Tip 6 for the kitchen, relabel jars and canned goods. Look, using a thick black marker and like an index card. You can reuse this as well, and you'd sort of wrap the index card around the jar or the can and hold it in place with a rubber band. 7, remove small throw rugs from the kitchen. They are not easily seen and they may be a tripping hazard. 8, keep cupboard doors and drawers closed at all times and make sure that everything is always put away in its proper place. Ooh, that's anti-clutter advice, isn't it? I better take that one to heart. Put everything away in its proper place. 9, use the clock method to identify where certain foods are located on a plate. For example, you could say the rice is at 3 o'clock and your beans are at 7 o'clock. Next, we come to a section about rehabilitation specialists or vision rehabilitation. Rehabilitation specialists are excellent. They can recommend many techniques that will help people with vision loss maintain their privacy and independence. The first place they talk about is in the bathroom. Here are some tips to make the bathroom as safe as possible. 1, use illuminated or magnifying mirrors. 2, use colored toothpaste so that it shows more on the white bristles of a toothbrush. Again, you're going for contrast. If you have a blue toothbrush, I think you could use some white toothpaste on that. 3, use towels that contrast in color with the bathroom decor. 4, use a rubber-backed mat in the bottom of the tub. I found on a recent trip that any hotel you go into that does not have a mat for the bathtub, they will most likely bring one to your room, a rubber-backed mat in the bottom of the tub to keep you from slipping. 5, this is a really cute idea. Float a brightly colored sponge while running the bath water. The sponge will indicate how high the water has risen. I have seen tips where you can buy yourself a floating rubber ducky. and you put the rubber ducky in the bathtub, and you can see right where that rubber ducky has risen so that you know the level of the water. Rubber ducky or a sponge, either way. Float one as you're putting water in the bathtub. Number six, a safety issue, throw out any old medication. Get rid of it. They say mix it with coffee grounds. Number seven, label your current medication with a thick black letter on each bottle. And then keep a large print list in the medicine cabinet near that medicine explaining what is what. Your list would say, if you put an A, a big huge A on the bottle, your list would say A, blood pressure pills. Take one each morning. Next, the final tip for the bathroom, pick up the bath mat after each use and fold it over the edge of the tub to prevent tripping. Now, when you're going out and about, and you're now that you've made some changes in the home, take a look at how to make things easier when you're outdoors. Careful planning and good organization will help, whether you are on your own or accompanied on an outing. Proper training from someone qualified in independent travel skills will help the person with low vision feel more confident about venturing outside the home. These people, by the way, are called orientation and mobility specialists. They will help you get around in your environment outside your home. Some people find a white cane to be very helpful, not just for getting around, but also for identifying themselves to others that they have a visual impairment that may not otherwise be obvious. There are different varieties of white canes to suit the needs of different kinds of users. They can include collapsible travel canes, a white support cane, and long travel canes. They also have walkers that have the white cane indication on them if you need a walker. While some people are not comfortable using a white cane, most people realize that the advantages outweigh the disadvantages and use the white cane as a mobility tool and as an identifier. Next, we have a section on the sighted guide technique. If you are acting as a sighted guide for someone with a visual impairment, walk a half a step ahead of the person under your care. Let the person lightly grasp your arm just above the elbow. Approach curbs, stairs, and doorways squarely, right straight on, never at an angle. And let the person know when to step up or step down. Come to a full stop before the stairs. If necessary, switch sides so the person can use the handrail. The person will find the first step by sliding his foot forward until he feels the stair, and you will proceed up or down together. Always remain half a step ahead of the person you are guiding and announce when you have come to the last step. As with any activity, confidence and skill come with time. Chapter 3, which we'll all get into next week, Chapter 3 discusses a number of low vision aids that can be used to identify street signs and addresses. Some people who are visually impaired will be more open to the idea of independent travel than others. Remember that each one of us is different in many respects. And don't forget about these orientation and mobility specialists. You might ask your vision care provider if you could see one of those people to get personalized tips. Here are some more ways to manage potentially frustrating situations if you go outside your home. This is called an independent travel checklist, and there are six items on this list. Number one, use large print checks and large print writing guides to make signing your checks easier. Number two, identify coins by touch, and you can learn to fold your paper money in a certain way or separate it in your wallet by according to denominations. Number three, for independent travel, take a moment to let your eyes adjust when you switch from a bright environment when you walk into a dimly lit environment. Number four, carry a magnifier and or pen light to read labels, price tags, elevator buttons, or directions. Number five, use a mini tape recorder to make a shopping list instead of struggling with a handwritten list. Or if you're smartphone savvy, you can always use the notes app or the notes section on your smartphone to make a shopping list. Number six, tell the bus driver in advance which stop you require and then sit close to the driver in the front of the bus. Next, we come to a section called New Lifestyles and Hobbies. Meeting people and joining social groups can be challenging for someone with low vision. Making eye contact is usually the first thing people do. But for people with vision loss, this is not always possible. Many people with vision loss avoid social interaction for this reason. It is suggested you arrange for a friend or a peer to help make the initial introductions. Explain to these new acquaintances that their smiles and waves can't be seen. Encourage others to identify themselves when they speak. For example, you'd say, "Hi, Leslie, this is Sandra. How are you doing?" Driving is one activity that people with severe vision loss find extremely hard to give up. However, activities such as reading or playing a musical instrument can continue with a little patience and adjustment. For example, large print books or a video magnifier may help with reading. Sheet music can be enlarged using a photocopier. Family members, friends, and caregivers can play a lead role in identifying new hobbies that require less vision. Talking books, for example, are an excellent substitute when reading becomes too difficult. Audio and large print books are available from many sources, including libraries and bookstores. They have large print crossword puzzles, and they have large print playing cards. And these are available for those who enjoy these activities as part of their daily routine. Sports enthusiasts can also rethink the way they normally exercise. Take a walk with a friend instead of alone, or use the schoolyard track for longer distance exercise. Stationary bikes and other seated equipment in most gyms and fitness clubs are also excellent ways of staying active. Changing one's lifestyle is difficult and requires flexibility and patience. A lifetime of pleasures and pastimes is hard to let go of. However, clinging to old hobbies can sometimes lead to frustration and ultimately less enjoyment. Be creative. The impact of vision loss may be a chance to make some very exciting and rewarding life changes. You know, looking through information, I found out that they have even created a Rubik's Cube for people who are blind. Yes, two kids, wouldn't you know? Two kids have replaced the colored squares with textures, and the friends created a cube that could be solved by touch instead of sight. They've tested their new product at the Washington School for the Blind out in the West Coast, where they have received rave reviews. Many students have already solved one side, and a couple of them have solved two, with plans to finish the whole thing, which is a position many of us have been in for the better part of the last two decades since it was invented. Contact information, I promised you, is as follows. In the USA, you would call 1-800-722-3393. This is for HumanWear. Their website is www.humanware.com. That is spelled HumanWare, humanware.com. There will be more information from this brochure in the next program, and I will also include an extensive list of companies, other companies who also supply assistive equipment. But to end today's program, I have a quote from a website called www.coolblindtech.com. Jessica Ricard said, "Don't think outside the box. Think like there is no box." Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.